It's more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Many of us consider our pets to be part of the family. Some of us even go so far as to dress dogs and cats in human clothing and think of ourselves as pet parents. But before you roll your eyes, the idea that we could make an animal a contributing part of the family was something that actually happened in the 1960s and 70s. It was then that psychologist Maurice Temmerlin and his wife adopted a day-old chimpanzee whom they named Lucy.
The idea was to raise Lucy as much as possible like a human child, and in some ways, it worked. She learned to dress herself, she made tea for the Temmerlins' guests, she used sign language, and even enjoyed a cocktail or two. For 12 years, she lived with a couple before it became painfully obvious that the arrangement had to end. It was an experiment, and one of its most interesting results was not how it changed Lucy, but how it changed the humans who lived with her.
And it's that change that the new opera Lucy explores. Its world premiere by the Milwaukee Opera Theater opens tomorrow night. Jill Anaponicek is artistic director. She, along with composer John Glover and librettist Kelly Rourke, joined me in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks for having us, Bonnie.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So tell me about this next extravaganza that Milwaukee Opera Theater is about to do. What an interesting topic for a world premiere opera.
It is indeed an extravaganza. This is the same team that developed Guns N' Roses Cavalier.
Which
for
I have
us.
To say, fabulous name.
Yes.
Yes, that was a fabulous name.
In 2013, it was such an exciting, electric concert that we decided that we needed to work together again. And I asked the team what they felt they would like to work on, and they selected an opera in progress called Lucy, which was inspired by a radio program.
Really? Not by the actual event itself, but by a radio program?
Well, a combination of the two. It started with Kelly and I being interested in creating a one-man show for Andy Wachowski, who's an incredible baritone, an incredible actor, and a great friend. And we searched long and hard for various ideas of what to do for him, and then we heard this Radiolab episode about Lucy, and in that episode there are excerpts of Temmerlin's memoir that are read by an actor, and just there was something about just the voice and the type of character that he was that just seemed so intriguing and made us want to go find the full memoir and dig into this and dig into his voice and his experience and just that sort of open the floodgates for a story about Temmerlin and his experience trying to raise this chimpanzee as his human child.
And that is a true story. That really happened.
Yes.
Yeah. And so – but Lucy does not make an appearance in your opera, or does she?
No. I mean, it's really –
it's a one-man show.
It's about Temmerlin. That's right. It's a one-man show. As much as it's about her and her experience – being raised as a human, it's – and I think Kelly can speak about this more eloquently than I can because words are really not my thing. But we were really interested in what this did to him and his experience of trying to be a father, of trying to run an experiment that was also a deeply emotional bond, and just where that all went for him and how he reflected on these choices after they've been made and he can't undo them.
So, Kelly, how did you find the words to express that in this?
Well, we started very much with Temmerlin's memoir and with the stories that he told about his experience. And the story that we wanted to tell when we listened to the Radiolab show, and I think when most people listen to the Radiolab show, if you look at the comments, they are, there are hundreds of comments talking about what a terrible, terrible person he was. Because we have the distance. We know now in the way that Temmerlin did not, and all of the other families that cross-fostered chimps, we know how very like us they are, and we also know how unlike us they are in terms of their strength and impulse control. So from where we sit right now, it was a terrible, cruel idea from the beginning. But from where he sat, it wasn't. And as John was saying, he made choices that then he could not unmake. And so the story that we were interested in telling was to give a little bit more information so that maybe he would not be so quickly judged.
From what I know about the story, he did not go into this with any sort of malevolence. This was all so well intentioned.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that makes it more heartbreaking.
It's very naive.
Yeah. But yeah. Not malevolent.
Not at all.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, they went to great length to provide Lucy with what they considered an enriched environment to truly integrate her into their family. I mean, they loved and adored her and treated her not at all unlike their biological son.
The other thing that we found out in our research that was not apparent at all in the Radiolab story was that although they had Lucy in the home longer than any other family, there were a number of these cross-fostering projects going on. This was not one rogue guy saying, mm-hmm. what happens if I raise a chimp as my daughter? There was an Institute for Primate Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and they were placing all of these chimps with families. Probably the most famous one besides Lucy was a chimp named Nim Chimpsky, obviously a language project, who started his life in a brownstone on the Upper West Side. So there were all of these projects going on. Most chimps didn't last even a year in the homes. The humans couldn't really deal with it. But this was a time of enormous curiosity and fascination and learning and, I think, love. You talk to anyone who was involved in these chimp fostering projects, and they were just captivated and really felt like parents.
Mm-hmm. And like going back to the idea of how unmalevolent this was, there's a beautiful moment that Kelly pulled out in the libretto where he says, looking into her clear brown eyes, I have the feeling the more I look into Lucy, the more I see of my own basic nature. We talked to a lot of people who were involved in these cross-fostering experiments, as well as did a lot of research with writings and documentation from other people beyond Temerlin to get a better sense of the scope of what this was like. And this is another thing that comes out in this, is that this was a real desire for people to learn. They wanted to learn more from these chimpanzees as well. It was also done with a lot of respect and a lot of love. It turns out misplaced, or it had ramifications mm-hmm. that they didn't realize, but it wasn't done as a kind of like a petri dish. Well, particularly in Temerlin's case, that's certainly not the case. And as Kelly said, you know, most of these chimps, maybe a year they would live in a human home. And this is something that's truly remarkable about both of the organisms in this house, both Temerlin and Lucy. These two, from completely different worlds, found a way to live together in a house for 12 years. She lived with him and his son mm-hmm. and his wife, Jane. And the four of them somehow sustained this experience of a chimpanzee living as a full member of their family. And that even in and of itself, the more we dug into other scientists and researchers who tried to do this, it's like, wait a minute, there must be something truly remarkable there in both of their fearlessness and both of their willingness to try to explore this link.
What eventually ended it?
Well, he eventually realized that he couldn't sustain it. You know, I think that Lucy had a lot of intelligence. She learned to speak. I think chimps end up with like 3 to 4 year old
vocabulary.
IQ.
And I think, you know, the other thing is impulse control and all of those things. And we've all been around toddlers who melt down and they might break a lamp or whatever else. But you can take that toddler in a great big bear hug until they get themselves calmed down and everything's okay. A chimpanzee, on the other hand, is 4 times stronger than a human being. There were several near misses where she started to lose her temper. Temerlin talks about this in his memoir, and it's a really heartbreaking thing where she pulls herself back and he believes that she was terrified of her own impulse. Of course, we don't actually know. But they began to realize that it was too dangerous, that she could have that moment of losing her temper, and she's much stronger than them. The other thing is that he writes in his memoir, he and Jane had not been on a vacation the entire time. There was no one who could stay with Lucy. Following what John said about them learning to live together, I mean, he made tremendous sacrifices. They built a new wing on the house because it was the only way to contain her. She did not always choose to use the toilet. This was a very challenging situation for everyone. And for safety and whatever other reasons, he finally said, you know, this can't work. Chimps live to be 50 or 60, and he couldn't see going on for probably the rest of his life. So they needed to find another alternative.
And I can imagine that that must have been wrenching, too, for both of them, mm-hmm. you know, because she – in a way, you know, the risk of anthropomorphizing another mm-hmm. creature is that when you put them back in their own environment, they don't know what to do. They don't know who they are anymore.
Well, there was no sense of putting her back because she had never known another chimpanzee. She was introduced to a chimp at, what, 7 or 8 years old?
Right.
And screamed in terror. She was taken from her mother at a couple of days old. So okay. There was no sense of putting her back into the wild. There was a sense of taking a spoiled suburban teenager and saying, here, go live in the woods. sleep in trees and eat berries. Now, they truly believed, and they went to a lot of trouble looking at all of the different options, and they truly believed that this would be the right thing. You have to also remember this is 60s and 70s, you know, very much the idea of getting back to nature. And in fact, how Temerlin talked about her sometimes was learning about himself and his basic nature beyond all of this civilization that he had learned. So that idea of going back to the deep roots of who we are, all of that hippie
fundamental
stuff was,
humanness
yeah,
of some kind. Yeah.
That seemed like the right thing and the best thing.
So as you were thinking about this in terms of creating a stage production about it, was it clear from the beginning that it was going to be a one-person show and really kind of focused through him?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that we were always committed to the idea of creating some kind of evening-length work for Andy Wachowski. I mean, that the thing that's more remarkable probably than the subject of the story that we're telling are the people that are helping us create and tell this. This is a group of people who has worked together in many configurations, many different times, on many different projects. And we all know each other's moves. We all know our strengths. We all know our weaknesses. And it was really about creating a piece for Andy. And then this became the right piece to sort of put him out there at his best. So then it was like, okay, but what is that? How do we do that? And so then there was another conversation of pulling everybody back together and kind of hashing that out. Well, how do you put him on stage? What drives the dramatic energy forward? When you have one guy on stage, like, what's the other tension that pulls and pushes at him? That then sort of totally reformed the concept of how the piece was structured and how it might work. And then Kelly went away and created this amazing, fully fledged libretto that's about a 70-minute long work that is Andy taking you through the full emotional journey of what someone experiences trying to raise a child and then having to let go of that child at some point and let that child be whatever it's going to be when it's grown up and he can't control it anymore.
And you have, I think you said, Jelena, 6 days to make this all happen?
Yeah, so no problems.
So absolutely lots of time.
Yes. Yeah, by MOT standards, it's tons of time. The one thing that was important to us was to retain this team intact. So for them, they've been working on it for 4 years. We have 6 days on the ground in Milwaukee to knit together the world premiere. But it's been percolating in their brains, in their imaginations. They've workshopped it with 2 different organizations. They rehearsed it for 4 days in New York City last month with Andy. They've done an enormous amount of preparation. So it's like everything was prepared independently, and our job here is to stitch it together into, you know, an outrageously gorgeous theatrical experience. It's really beautiful.
And I have to say that the opportunity Jelena is giving us to come together with the original team is so tremendous. Most of the great works were created by teams that worked together over and over and over again. That doesn't tend to be as much the case today in terms of how works get made. So for Jelena to give us the opportunity to bring our team together was huge.
This is actually a very daring thing for a producer to do. This does not happen very often. This is a very rare gift in the current climate to have someone support the team that began realizing something. In many other scenarios, this would go something like, the opera's great, John. Kelly, it's fantastic. You guys finish it. I have this baritone that's just going to be so great for this show. Can we just – I know you workshopped it with this other guy, but I really want to use this person. And that – so to have the chance to do it like this has just been – you know.
Well, doing it the way you envisioned it to be done, which doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to it very, very much. You guys have to go back and, like, hang lights or do fireworks or something, right?
We have to go do the everything.
Do the everything. But I want to thank you for taking some time out of your day to come and talk to us about Lucy. Best of luck.
Thanks
so much.
Jelena Ponisek is Artistic Director of the Milwaukee Opera Theater. Librettist Kelly Rourke and composer John Glover are the creators of the opera Lucy, which receives its world premiere tomorrow at the 10th Street Theater. There is more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect.
One final break, and when we return, why the time is right for a new style guide to writing. This is Lake Effect from WUWM. Thank you.